Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got a lot that's happened this week, but first we're going to cover the explosion that occurred on the 4th of August around 6:30 or so in the afternoon, Lebanese time, in the port of Beirut, Lebanon, and in the capital also. But it was in the port facilities where first a fire route was reported. And then from that fire, they're saying that a large cache into the tons of ammonium nitrate was set off that created a tremendous explosion. We're going to first play just an overview from The Guardian of the overall event, and then we're going to bring you up to date with some of the latest figures. Here we go with this quick overview.
It's rare for a tragedy to really touch almost everyone in a city, and in a fairly small city like Beirut. We've seen virtually everyone come forward with some kind of story.
A cloud of smoke covered every place. It drained the glass, stores, apartments, houses. Everything fell down. People were screaming, running.
I was shocked. I was wondering what happened. Am I going to die?
So just after 6 p.m. on the 4th of August, a massive explosion rippled across Beirut.
What?
The devastation, the breadth of this is just utterly staggering.
Overseas, new details about that massive explosion in Beirut, Lebanon. At least 150 people are confirmed dead.
Authorities say the death toll is almost certain to rise further as search operations continue and the number of missing remains unknown.
People have reported damage to their homes 5-6 kilometers away, even further. The shockwave was heard and felt across Beirut. It registered at about 3.5 on the Richter scale and was even heard in neighboring Cyprus, which is about 200 kilometers away over the sea. In the immediate aftermath of the blast, the reports were that a fireworks factory had gone up. But it was obvious that fireworks couldn't do the scale of damage that was seen across Beirut. And pretty quickly we learned that the culprit was, in fact, a massive stash of ammonium nitrate, 2,750 tons of a highly explosive substance that had been sitting in the port of Beirut for about 7 years. Ammonium nitrate is a very common substance. It has both civilian and military uses. Its most common civilian use is as a fertilizer. You put it in a field and it helps plants to grow. However, it's also highly explosive, and terrorist groups are among those who have been known to use ammonium nitrate to blow things up. One of the questions swirling around Beirut is why? Why was there so much of a risky substance just sitting within meters of residential properties, restaurants, you know, people's homes, schools, hospitals? The answer that we have so far is that this ammonium nitrate was on its way from the Eastern European country of Georgia to the African state of Mozambique. In Mozambique, it would have been used by a commercial and industrial explosives company. Instead, the ship carrying the ammonium nitrate was impounded in Beirut. Some people say it's because there was a dispute over staffing, over port fees. The Lebanese are saying it's because the ship it was sailing on wasn't seaworthy. The point is, at some point after October 2013, the stash of ammonium nitrate ended up in a warehouse in the port of Beirut. Lebanese customs officials say they sent at least 6 letters to the Lebanese judiciary asking, pleading with them to do something about this nitrate, saying that it was dangerous to the people who worked in the port, and that if left to its own devices, there was a risk that it could one day blow up all of Beirut. It's becoming clear that this occurred because of negligence, because of corruption. Two things that Lebanon's political class have been accused of for many years. Lebanon had protests towards the end of last year in which people were expressing their outrage at the government for these very things, saying that they're corrupt, they're negligent, and they needed to go.
Beirut is crying. Beirut is screaming. People are tired. You know, we went through, we had the revolution, and then we had the forest fires, and then we had the pandemic, and we had the economic crisis, and now this is the cherry on top. We're demanding justice.
You really couldn't have a more perfect symbol of all the things that Lebanese hate about their political class than an explosion from a substance that was sitting in the port that people knew was risky, but that nothing was done about for 7 years.
Now some further details on what's been going on over there in Lebanon in Beirut, the capital and the port city of Lebanon. And here are some of the latest. There were protests. The protests continue in Beirut. Protests are called for the government's resignation. And there was tear gas, used against some of those protesters over there. Lebanese policemen killed in clashes with demonstrators in Beirut. U.S. says support of Lebanese to peaceful protest urges political reforms. It's what the United States is saying. PM Diab to request early elections. They're going to call for early elections over there. Protesters enter Lebanese foreign ministry, chant against ruling class. Beirut port explosion, death toll rises to 158. That's today, Saturday, August the 8th. Riot police fire tear gas at protesters in Beirut. We said that earlier. More than 60 people still missing after the blast that blew some people away. Wife of Dutch ambassador to Lebanon dies from blast injuries. We've got ongoing deaths occurring. The Kataib Party says 3 MPs resigned from Parliament. Michael Ayn and Boris Johnson agree to work on Lebanon's recovery. The British are going to come forward. We've already sent 3 transports in, Americans have, with supplies and teams that will help perhaps save some of the people that might be trapped in the debris. It says at least 43 Syrians among people killed in Syrian blast. Survivors recalling all the terror of the event. Greek Orthodox Church altar survives blast. God help that. Hezbollah leader says group had no weapons at warehouse. EU pledges to aid Lebanon in wake of Beirut explosion. Let's see. Beirut explosion live coverage. It says it goes on and on. But anyway, that's the latest that we have in describing the Beirut explosion. And it was just a terrible blow to the people. I think it displaced over 300,000 people in the immediate area that lived in that immediate area in high rises and apartments and so forth. But next we have coming up an interview that Alex Jones had with Dr. Wakefield on vaccines and immunizations and so on. And we've got 2 parts to this. And we're going to play the first part, and then we're going to make some comments and then play the second part. So here we go next with this interview that Alex Jones had with Dr. Wakefield. He is a magnificent person and a stand-up person for the truth. And he's very, very critical about vaccinations, immunizations, and so forth. So here we go with that interview.
What happened with this act, when it gave the industry liability protection for a mandated product, and then the government agencies that were responsible for protecting American children conspired with the industry to destroy, to sabotage those things that have been put in place to protect the American people from dangerous drugs.
And who was there at the time? Fauci, the very same cast of characters.
Been there throughout, absolutely, and extraordinary to see him. He keeps cropping up when anything bad's going down. There's Tony Fauci. And what it did is to make the industry so rich that they could buy governments, worldwide. They could buy policy worldwide. They could buy the media worldwide, and they could buy doctors and medical training worldwide. Vaccination policy as a public health policy should depend entirely on the public, on the consumer's confidence in the policymaker. When that's gone, when that confidence has gone, when the hearts and minds of the public are lost, what you have left is false, and that is mandatory vaccination, no school, no private school, no public school, no home school, no medical exemptions. Doctors and scientists who give these exemptions or advocate for them are pursued and delicensed. When you start taking children away from their parents, and then when you start to have this global initiative of chipping, microchipping and vaccine passports, and you can't live in society, according to Bill Gates, without being fully compliant with the vaccination policy, then you are dealing with force. And all you've got is force. And force, Alex, as you know, is a road to nowhere. It is going to fail.
All right. Thank you for joining us here. We're now into the third hour. Dr. Andy J. Wakefield is our guest. And when you define the term maverick, he's the definition of it. And I know he doesn't want to be praised or anything, but they really tried to destroy him. Now, about half our stations don't carry this first 5 minutes, but they got him on early, so I don't want to waste time that we have here. But I'm going to kind of build him up a little bit when we start the next segment for all the folks, the millions, probably 2 million people that are going to be joining us. But give us a little prelude, Dr. Wakefield, since you were on with us a month ago, all the craziness that's happened, of what's on your palette of paint here to illustrate for us what's happening.
Well, Alex, the new film's just come out, and it's having a huge impact. It's a story about the 1986 Act signed into law by Ronald Reagan, which gave liability protection to the vaccine manufacturers for deaths and injuries caused by their vaccines. And it's really a story, Alex, of what happens when you take a product or an industry outside of the constraints of the free market. You stop the free market operating to select for the best products, the safest products. You give them a free ride, and you pay a terrible, terrible price. And then you make that product mandatory. So you've got an unsafe product that is made mandatory. It's forced into American children. Suddenly you have the perfect business model. You have no liability. You have a compulsory market, a mandatory market. All you can do is make a massive profit. That's what the pharmaceutical industries have done. That's the future of the industry, is vaccination. They have 300 new vaccines in the marketplace, coming online, and that is even before the COVID-19 vaccine threat hit us. And so we live in a very, very precarious world where we are not protected anymore by the constraints of the free market.
And, of course, we'll recap that and go over all that, but it's so sinister with all the health problems and all the autism and all the autoimmune diseases and all the brain damage with 50-something vaccines. Now there's 300, and now we see all these medical doctors by the hundreds promoting hydroxychloroquine being shut down and big pharma merging with big tech in really a diabolical plan that makes the head spin.
You know, what that illustrates, when you, first of all, Alex, it started with people like you and me. It started with people who were labeled as anti-vaxxers or vaccine safety aware, or those who wanted better science, or those who were concerned for the well-being of children. And it spread. It spread to those who were selling nutritional supplements, those who advocated for natural health. And then it spread to the mainstream. Suddenly we're seeing the social media platforms, the mainstream media shutting down mainstream doctors, doctors coming out to tell us about their clinical experience in the front line with the treatment of COVID-19. When you shut these people down, where does it end? It doesn't. And what it does is it tells the consumer, it tells people watching that the single objective is to focus on a vaccine and vaccine-only narrative for the salvation of mankind, to the betterment of who? To the betterment of the pharmaceutical industry and those people invested in it, like Bill Gates and Tony Fauci.
And I know you don't like to speculate, but it's not speculation now. We'll talk about it later. Digital tattoos to prove you've had it, compulsory tracking. If you want to have a job or get on an airplane, BBC says you'll have a digital chip put in you to prove it. And then they announce it, but then we say, hey, that's a bad idea. They go, oh, that doesn't exist. So they try these psychological tactics. We're going to go to break in a moment. But what's the best website or best place for people to find the new film, 1986?
Go to www.1986theact.com. 1986theact.com. Watch it there, stream it, download it and buy it, order the DVD. It's coming your way.
All right, folks. We're going to cover all of this when we come back. And I know as an audience, you've already done the research. You already know that Dr. Wakefield's telling the truth. You've experienced it with your own child having convulsions when they got vaccines. You know it. But remember, you've got to warn everybody now because people are more ready to hear the truth now than ever. So tell everyone you know right now to tune into Band.video, Infowars.com/show, that local radio station or TV station you're watching or listening to. That's how we reach more people. I know I'm stating the obvious, but I've got to remember myself. At red lights, I'd roll down the window and say, tune in. Or I do it at the grocery store. Or I do it when I'm with family. That's how we win this fight. They try to suppress us. We work that much harder.
How do we navigate this increasingly precarious world in which we live? In order to understand where we're going, we need to understand where we've come from. In order to understand where we've come from, you need to watch 1986, The Act. It is the story of one of the most powerful forces in the universe, and that is maternal intuition.
Okay, okay.
No, no. This is not halftime entertainment. We've got work to do.
This is a force that has evolved in our species over thousands and thousands of years. It is far more powerful than anything else that man might have contrived. It is the reason that we are here on this planet right now. And if we listen to it, it will be the reason why we are here in 1,000 years' time.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back live, and Dr. Andrew Wakefield is our guest here for the rest of the hour. Now, I'm not going to go over his whole background, but he produced Vaxxed, From Cover Up to Catastrophe. They tried to censor it, it blew up in their face. Now they've put out 1986, The Act. It just comes out today. I intend, again, this weekend to watch it with my wife. 1986theact.com. You have to understand, Big Pharma has merged with Big Tech. Hundreds of prominent doctors we know of. We're getting emails every day from new doctors. Some of them, the heads of virology at universities, the heads of whole divisions at hospitals, are coming out and saying hydroxychloroquine, when taken with zinc, 100% recovery, 99% recovery. They're getting called up before review boards. State senator in Minnesota, who's well-loved and a major award-winning medical doctor, he pointed this out and also pointed out that the death rate's like 0.037, way lower than flu. So why is it he's been called up for review. Well, Dr. Wakefield doesn't want to talk about himself. He wants to talk about the future. But 20 years ago or 18 years ago, whenever it was, he was all over the news that he falsified the reports. He admits he's a fraud. There's no connection to gut and autism. Well, today we know hundreds of studies later he was right. He never said he falsified anything. He never said he was a fraud, and he wasn't. He was a trailblazer, a maverick. But see, I've experienced that. It's not about whining. It's about listeners learning how bad it is. They go on the news and say, Jones said in court he's a fake and an actor, and none of it's real. Where's the transcript? Where's the clip? It's not true. It's a lie. They were showing me in a Joker outfit 15 years ago during my divorce proceedings in a custody battle, yelling and screaming about stuff. And my lawyer said, when Jack Nicholson plays the Joker, he's not really the Joker. I was being an actor there as a joke, but it wasn't my mainline persona who I am. So they put him through hell. They took his medical license. He got it back, all that. The point is that it was all a hoax. And they now admit it was a hoax. And so the fact that he went through the fire, persevered, and is now one of the main leaders, if not the leader, of exposing this threat to all of our futures by the exempt from liability global big pharma system is really a testament of victory. And so maverick's a great word for Dr. Wakefield, but a better word is the phoenix. And so we appreciate you. We got 6 minutes to break. We've got the rest of the hour. Let's get into what you were just starting to get to for some stations that joined us, how big this is and what's coming and the shackling of the medical community that started with you.
Well, I think that the film is about 1986, The Act. It's about the law signed by Ronald Reagan, which gave the industry liability protection. I believe, Alex, that this law is at the heart of the problems we face globally with vaccination today, which are immense. It is a topic of discussion around every dinner table, every breakfast table, in every family in all over the world. It is this single issue of what do we do? There's so much conflicting evidence, so much conflicting information. We see the experts on television, and then we see other people saying, no, this isn't true, and then we see the damaged children. People are very, very confused. And what happened with this act, when it gave the industry liability protection for a mandated product, and then the government agencies that were responsible for protecting American children conspired with the industry to destroy, to sabotage those things that have been put in place to protect the American people from dangerous drugs.
And who was there at the time? Fauci, the very same cast of characters.
Been there throughout, absolutely, and extraordinary to see him. He keeps cropping up when anything bad's going down. There's Tony Fauci. And what it did is to make the industry so rich that they could buy governments worldwide. They could buy policy worldwide. They could buy the media worldwide. And they could buy doctors and medical training worldwide. That's what they could buy. But, Alex, there's one thing they couldn't buy, and that is people like you. They could not buy the soul of the American people. They could not buy. If you saw in Berlin just last week 1.3 million people in the streets protesting, no masks, saying we've had enough of this lockdown, we've had enough of this BS, we are not going to put up with this any longer. We want natural immunity. We don't want vaccine immunity. That's resistance. And that is what is happening now, and that is what pharma cannot and will never be able to buy.
It's beautiful what you're saying, and it's so true. And I'm going to play this later, but I'm sure you're aware and you've seen, we've talked about it, the two-day conference they had in Switzerland on the 2nd and 3rd of December last year in 2019 with the head of the vaccine program saying, we don't test. We're just told by foundations what to do. The doctors, the front line's wobbly. They've got sick people. This is collapsing. Meanwhile, here comes the whole COVID thing. I mean, that is so huge to even have the bureaucrats saying, we don't know what's going on. It shows that it's not even them. It's a group above it.
And the other thing about that meeting is it was really in large part to deal with the growing threat of people who question vaccine safety. How do we control this? How do we contain it? What can we learn from these people who are spreading their message so effectively? It's spreading so effectively because it's true, because it's real, because it's happening every day. We're not sitting in plush hotel rooms conspiring to produce some narrative that suits our profiteering. It's not that at all. It is the fact that we are dealing at the ground level, at the coalface, with injury upon injury upon injury. There is another way, a better way of earning a living than doing this, Alex. But for the life of me, I'm not going to walk away from it. Well, there is so much damage being done.
Now, I understand. I'm showing footage of the million-plus people that marched in Berlin. Let me raise this point to you. Obviously, the vaccines are damaging, autoimmune response, all the rest of it. It's coming out. So they double down and just say, okay, we're taking all of society over. That's going to blow up bigger. I mean, gut level, that's what I think. I think this is going to force a massive awakening. It already is. Are you seeing the same thing I'm seeing?
Exactly. It's fascinating to see how this paradox where vaccination policy as a public health policy should depend entirely on the public, on the consumer's confidence in the policymaker. When that's gone, when that confidence is gone, when the hearts and minds of the public are lost, what you have left is false, and that is mandatory vaccination, no school, no private school, no public school, no home school, no medical exemptions. Doctors and scientists who give these exemptions or advocate for them are pursued and delicensed. When you start taking children away from their parents, and then when you start to have this global initiative of chipping, microchipping and vaccine passports, and you can't live in society, according to Bill Gates, without being fully compliant with the vaccination policy, then you are dealing with force, and all you've got is force. And force, Alex, as you know, is a road to nowhere. It is going to fail, and it's just a matter of time. And that protest in Berlin was one of many and is the writing on the wall. They wonder why they're losing. They're losing because they are wrong.
That's right. The studies show that they're all in their own little bubble. But now Gates and Fauci admit they're not in the bubble, and they admit that people really hate them and are calling them Joseph Mengele, Dr. Gates and Dr. Fauci. Of course, Gates is no doctor. And they're having to fight the real doctors around the world telling the truth. Stay with us.
What our mad scientists are doing, whether it's vaccinations or whatever, they're altering our basic DNA and RNA, using RNA to affect a change in overall DNA. These changes are permanent, and you can't undo those changes. So whoever we give birth to after some of our DNA and RNA has been changed is forever changed. So are we coming into a transhumanist type of era? This is what many of the people are saying. Now, this last interview portion that Alex had with Dr. Wakefield, he poses that question, where are we going from here? So here we go with that last part of the interview.
Maybe I should deal with that first.
Yeah, do it.
Because we were right there, Alex. We were talking about that. And we were talking about the long-term, the medium to long-term dangers of these genetically manipulated, these Frankenstein vaccines that have never been used in humans before. But there was an example, and as you know, with the dengue virus, the dengue fever virus vaccine in children in the Far East. And they developed this vaccine, which was one genetic backbone, one virus with other virus, the dengue virus, added to that. So a true Frankenstein vaccine, something that had never been seen before in the natural world. And they injected it into lots of people, lots and lots of children. It got through approval based upon the data that they'd given to the regulators. And it was given to hundreds of thousands of children. And it produced antibodies. It produced immunity, apparently, and it didn't seem to produce any adverse reactions. So people were happy with this until these children were exposed to the natural dengue fever virus itself. And when that happened, it was catastrophe. Many died, many were injured, and the rest of those children who were exposed to that vaccine lived with that risk for the rest of their lives. When they will encounter the natural virus, they will overreact and have a meltdown. Their immune system will go into what is called a cytokine storm. Now, this process, this immune priming, so that when you encounter the new, the natural virus, you run into real problems. This was seen with the SARS vaccine in the ferrets. This was the reason why that experiment, that vaccine was abandoned for SARS, because they saw this overreaction of the primed immune system. This is something that we have to be very careful of, and it's not something that's ever going to be seen in the short-term safety studies that are being conducted on these.
I was about to say, they're skipping animal trials. They're admitting most people get sick in the trials, and Gates says 700,000 will get sick and die. What are they priming us for, A, and then B, getting back to what you were just saying, that a lot of experts are saying it looks like that maybe previous vaccines for the flu, because COVID-19 was some vaccine test, they're not sure, that maybe because it's an artificial test, that once it got out of the lab by accident, it's triggering because it's got flu and SARS and all of it in it.
Yes, and what's alarming about Gates' approach is he goes on television and says everybody should have this vaccine, all 7 billion people in the world, and there will be casualties, there will be risk. And at that point, Alex, rather than saying, and for those who are injured by the vaccine, there will be compensation. We will look after them. We will make sure that their health...
He says we need to be indemnified.
Yeah, that's exactly right. His emphasis, his only concern, is there will be injuries and therefore we need indemnity for the manufacturers. There's no shred of humanity in his reaction to the fact that all...
But the good news is, thanks to you and millions of people, but you're one of the top... I know you want credit, but it's got to be due where it's due. We'll know to protect you and support you. Thanks to you and others in this show, they have to admit now there's damage. Remember, they were used to say you were crazy. There's no damage, Dr. Wakefield.
That's right. And now it's become so self-evident. This is the tragedy, Alex. It's become so common, so prevalent. Even those who had resisted this notion for many years are witnessing it in their own communities, their own families, their own children. It's really very, very sad. It should never have had to be this way, and there is so much damage that could have been avoided. And the question now is, what do we do? What do Americans do? And the fascinating thing about this is, someone who observes American politics, having come from the outside and observes American politics, is that the rush to mandate vaccines for all children, ultimately all adults, in states, which is where these laws are made, has been divided directly down political lines. And in every effort to support mandatory vaccination, there are the Democrats. And in the resistance to mandatory vaccination, there have been the Republicans. And that's just a fact. I don't mean to quantify it or qualify it.
Well, I agree, but that's getting a lot of liberals to support the Republicans.
It's a simple fact. And so, but what is happening now is that many, many more people are coming over to this side, to the side of health freedom, of bodily autonomy, of the choice to what to put in your child's body or your own body. People have been woken up by this COVID issue, such that, and historically, of course, when you look at the way in which the political parties are funded, the Republicans get their funding from oil and gas and the automotive industry, which are not available to the great majority of Democrats, who get their funding largely from the pharmaceutical industry and therefore are beholden to the benevolence of the pharmaceutical industry to mount their campaigns. And therefore, when it comes to instituting preferential policies for that industry, it's seen state by state by state.
Why don't we just nationalize vaccines? Because, I mean, let me ask you as an expert. If there's a vaccine works, like tetanus or whatever, if it's not tainted or been tested, I want it. I mean, I get it has side effects, but are you against vaccines, period? Or, I mean, explain, we're not against vaccines, right? We're just against liability protection and guinea pigging, right?
Yeah, I'm not against anything, Alex. I'm pro. I'm pro-science. I'm pro-safety. I'm pro...
So are there any safe vaccines? Has everyone I've ever looked at's got problems?
Yeah. That's my experience as well. The more I look, the more problems I find. And it gets worse and it gets worse. And it doesn't get better and it gets worse. And so, no, I'm not anti anything. I'm pro safety. I'm pro vaccine. I'm pro liability. I am pro.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If something works, I'm going to take it. But if I've had family, so much family gets sick from vaccines. Everybody has the stories. We only got a minute and a half left. I'm going to go see the film, but in closing, gut level, how does this end? I see the big establishment losing. I think like Hitler, when he's losing in the West, he invades Russia, that makes him totally lose. I think this offense they've launched, to use the Hitler analogies, they're Barbarossa, they're Waterloo. I think they're going to lose.
I think they are. And I think what the American people, and I have very good reason to believe this, the American people will ultimately in November vote for a president, whoever that might be, who will stand up and say, American bodily autonomy, the right of Americans to choose what goes into their bodies, is first and foremost. That is what America's about. If we are going to rush this vaccine to market, if there is no liability, there can be no mandates. You cannot force people to have something that's not been, not at all.
And Trump has said he doesn't want mandates, but he still says, oh, vaccine, get the stock market up. Absolutely incredible. So the film is out now. If I go home tonight, I've got to watch the one censored on pedophilia. I'm going to get to that, but I'm going to watch your film this weekend. If I go to the site, I can watch it tonight.
You can watch it tonight. You can download it. You can, and you can order your DVD. You go there, Alex, and I'd love to hear what you think of it.
Oh, I'm going to watch it. I love your work, and it's so important. I'm going to share it and tell friends and family. Again, what's the best website for people to visit?
Go to 1986theact.com. www.1986theact.com.
And then, folks, once you see it, have a viewing party. All right, Dr. Wakefield, thank you. Let's get you back again in the next few weeks, the next month. We really appreciate you, sir.
It's great to be on. Thank you.
Wow, what a gentleman.
This can create Frankenstein monsters. We don't know where we're going. We've got a bunch of mad scientists running around the world trying to socially and physically engineer us into a bunch of slaves and stuff. But anyway, coming up next is what John Solomon had to say with the attorney Weissman and his recent quotes from the New York Times. And here's what we have coming up with John Solomon interviewed on Lou Dobbs. Here we go now.
Where former Mueller special counsel prosecutor Andrew Weissman is calling on Justice Department personnel to resist Attorney General William Barr's efforts to expose Obamagate. Weissman stating that John Durham's investigation and U.S. Attorney John Bash's unmasking probe might influence the election. Weissman writing, quote, Justice Department employees in meeting their ethical and legal obligations should be well advised not to participate in any such effort. Joining me now, John Solomon, award-winning investigative reporter and editor-in-chief of Just the News. Good to see you, John. I think of the phrase obstruction of justice when I think of those words of Mr. Weissman. What do you think?
Well, listen, this is a man that in August of 2016, let's go back 4 years, met with Bruce Orr to hear about what was going on in the Steele investigation. If he wasn't concerned about meddling an election in 2016, I don't know why he'd be concerned now unless he has a political motive for saying so. But Bruce Orr, according to his own testimony, said he met with four officials to talk to them about what he knew in the early August timeframe, and Andrew Weissman was one of them. So when we wind back history, Andrew Weissman hasn't been consistent on this issue of meddling in the election. John Durham's not playing politics. He's a career prosecutor. He's just trying to get to the truth, and it looks like we're headed to in the final phase of that quest.
But to suspect a political motive by Mr. Weissman, I mean, really?
Imagine that. Yes, I know it's shocking to say it out loud, but, you know, Andrew Weissman's career is laid in front of us. We know what he did in the Enron case. We know what he did in the Mueller investigation. We know he did when he met with the AP in April of 17. This was a man that seemed to have a lot of ambition when it came to Donald Trump and the investigation.
Now, speaking of Donald Trump, the president kind of teased us in an interview that Lou Dobbs had with him earlier this week.
Yeah.
Let me play the tape and get your reaction. Roll tape.
Caught them spying. Now it's up to our attorney general. As you know, I've wanted them to do it. I didn't want to get overly involved. Maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. But I do hear it's breathtaking what they found.
Breathtaking, John.
Yeah.
What do you think he's referring to?
Well, listen, so much is in the public domain already. Just think about what we know now that we didn't know 3 years ago. The FBI doctored documents. They submitted a false FISA application. They spied on the president by putting an agent in his briefings to try to find out what he might say about Russia. It's already breathtaking. And if, as we suspect, John Durham has turned up new information about what happened earlier, such as in January to June before the FBI had an official investigation, I think we will have lost more of our breath. I think there's a lot more to come out. I think this is a thorough investigation. More than 100 people have worked on this probe, according to my sources. We're going to learn every last fact that we need to know about the fake Russia collusion investigation over the next few weeks. It doesn't surprise me. Breathtaking seems like the right word.
Well, what happened with Lindsey Graham's hearing this week was a little less than breathtaking. A lot of us were surprised at the easy ride he gave to Sally Yates, for example. And yet he said that it was a very important hearing because it actually exposed that the Russian dossier was false on which a FISA warrant was based. We all knew that years ago, though, didn't we?
We did. Listen, I think the most important thing you saw yesterday, beyond Sally Yates throwing Jim Comey under the bus, perhaps rightfully so, saying that he went rogue on the Flynn investigation, which the documents clearly show, no one disputes that, is she would not take ownership for her own conduct. This is a woman that twice went into the White House trying to get Mike Flynn fired, and then she signs a FISA warrant saying she's verified this, and she didn't. She was blaming the others. She never took a look at that FISA warrant. She rubber-stamped it. That's how bad the Justice Department and the FBI was coming out of the Obama era. They rubber-stamped FISAs that invaded American civil liberties and their privacy without really reading the facts. And I thought that was the headline yesterday. Sally Yates couldn't stand for the signature that she put on the document. She couldn't explain
right.
If she knew it was true. That's a tragedy.
It is, and unfortunately, I don't think she was pressed to the degree she needed to be pressed in terms of getting to the bottom of that. Finally, since really it is Durham's report that's going to reveal a hell of a lot more than anything we could get out of Congress right now, when do you think it's going to be? In fact, let me play another soundbite from Lou's interview with the president. He again sort of teased us about when. Play the tape.
And hopefully it'll come out soon. But it's beyond what anybody ever thought even possible, how bad it is. How bad it is and how corrupt it is. But I'm going to let them do that. I'm not going to do that. It's a horrible thing that took place. And it should never be allowed to happen to another president.
Now, John, you suggested that it's going to be coming out in a couple of weeks. Do you think there's a chance that for some reason Durham might wait until after the election to come out with this report?
It's always possible, right? You never know in justice and in the grand juries what will happen. But everything I've been talking to with my sources indicates that they're on a glide path to release something just before, just after Labor Day, probably just after Labor Day, but before September 21st, which is the end of summer officially on the calendar. The witnesses have been told to be around that time frame. That's sort of the expectation. Now the question is it just a report or do people get charged? And that's the big thing we have to wait and see.
Yeah, I've been disappointed a lot by this Durham report in terms of the timing of its release. Just the News editor-in-chief, John Solomon, great to see you. Thank you very much for being here. Appreciate it. And a reminder, Lou's new book is out, Fallout, Nuclear Bribes, Russian, I'm sorry, John Solomon's new book. I thought we were going to be talking about Lou's. It is called Fallout, Nuclear Bribes, Russian Spies, and the Washington Lies that Enriched the Clinton and Biden Dynasties. John, good for you. Thank you again. Coming up next, the left-wing national media playing their part in covering up Sally Yates' revelations about Obamagate. Sarah Carter is with us on that after a few quick messages.
Coming up next is what Ken Starr, former prosecutor on the Watergate, has to say about Valerie Jarrett's testimony and so forth, and how high does this spying on Trump scandal go? So here we go with that interview with Ken Starr.
Welcome back. Republican Senator Ron Johnson, he's now pushing back and pushing back hard as former Obama advisor Valerie Jarrett avoids answering questions and downplays whether President Barack Obama directed and ordered any of this the surveillance on the Trump campaign in 2016. This all happened in an interview with our Maria Bartiromo. Senator Johnson noting, quote, there was corruption at the highest levels under Obama when it came to spying on the Trump campaign, as President Trump today slamming New York City prosecutors and their criminal investigation into his businesses. Watch this.
This is just a continuation of the witch hunt. It's Democrat stuff. They failed with Mueller. They failed with everything. They failed with Congress. They failed at every stage of the game. This has been going on for 3.5, 4 years. Even before I got in, this was starting with the Mueller deal. Mueller started a little bit after, but it started with some of the people that you know very well, the names Strzok and Page and all of the different people.
Let's welcome former independent counsel Ken Starr. Ken, it's always great to have you back on. What was your reaction when you heard all of this?
Oh, I thought, my word, why can't we get to the truth? We have been struggling mightily to get to the truth, just get all the facts out. And I must say, Senator Ron Johnson is one of the most respected members of the United States Senate. He is very tenacious. He's very wise. He has an enormous amount of respect from his colleagues. But now the infighting has begun. So when he was joined in a really powerful letter by Senator Charles Grassley, likewise a deeply respected member of the Senate, renowned for his total integrity, the two of them are essentially saying to their colleagues and really to the American people, we really want to get to the bottom of this at long last, is what did, among other people, President Obama himself know, and when did he know it? We need to know these facts, and Valerie Jarrett and others need to cooperate, but I don't think that's what we're going to be getting.
Well, let's show you what Senator Johnson said. Valerie Jarrett basically dodging Maria Bartiromo's questions. Valerie Jarrett saying, well, this happened 4 years ago. Let's move on. Watch Senator Johnson here.
Well, you'll notice she didn't answer your question. She just talked about in general what the process should be. That's not the process they followed. It is very clear that there was corruption at the highest levels of certainly the FBI. We have evidence of it. I'm looking forward to John Durham wrapping up his investigation. You know, I personally believe that the intelligence community was involved in this thing. You know, their initial goal was to exonerate Hillary Clinton so she could win election. When she lost the election, their goal shifted to first and foremost, I think, sabotaging the Trump administration, which they've done a pretty good job of.
Your reaction, Ken?
Well, Valerie Jarrett has no excuse. If you're asked a question, you need to answer it. You can't simply say, hey, I've joined the latest movement of MoveOn.org. I'm sorry. He's a United States senator. He's the chairman of a very important committee on Homeland Security. Answer the questions. And if you don't answer the questions, it's fair, I believe, in the political arena to draw an adverse inference. In other words, you don't answer the question because the question would be inculpatory. That is, there would be guilt written all over your answer. That's a strong reaction. But I think at this point, 4 years into President Trump's administration, it is absolutely time to get it all out.
You know, Ken, reports are coming in that it may be worse than realized. The second investigation led by U.S. Attorney John Bash, we're seeing reports that they could be probing Obama officials for unmasking, meaning exposing the names of Trump team members in their communications, and that the U.S. attorney may be looking at wrongdoing in unmasking by Obama officials going back to 2015. It could include the collection of NSA raw data, National Security Agency raw data, and U.S. senators and U.S. citizens, and giving that raw data to outside contractors working for the FBI. And Ken, finally, the Project for Privacy and Surveillance Accountability, Bob Goodlatte, yes. He's a former House Judiciary Chair. You know, Ken, your reaction that the Obama administration reportedly may have been spying on members of Congress. We're talking about 4 dozen former and current and former members of both the House and Senate starting in January 2008 to January 15, 2020. Your reaction to that?
It is shameful. And if, in fact, these things happened and it's appearing that they did, then it is fair and accurate to use the term as abuse of power. That is the abuse of power, and in fact, it may in fact constitute criminal conduct, especially if there was a revelation of some of this information to outsiders who, especially the press, did not in fact need to have that information.
Ken, is this an indication of potential corruption at the highest levels of the Obama administration if these reports are true, if they're true?
Yes, if they're true, then we're talking about the use of the intelligence community for totally inappropriate reasons, and that is exactly one of the bases on which Richard Nixon was impeached, for the abuse of power, for the misuse of intelligence agencies. So it's definitely a political crime, a political offense, an abuse of power. Is it a crime in the traditional sense? That remains to be seen.
Ken Starr, it's great to see you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Liz.
Next, Devin Nunes slams Sally Yates' testimony. And earlier you heard John Solomon said that Sally Yates did not own her own responsibility in signing that FISA application. Now she's saying she didn't know any of that in there on the steel was uncollaborated and just rumor mill. She doesn't know anything about that, but she signed that thing. And she tried to get Flynn, General Flynn, removed as National Security Advisor twice, according to the report given earlier.
I was upset that Director Comey didn't coordinate that with us and acted unilaterally. Yes, I was.
Okay. Did Comey go rogue?
Then you could use that term, yes.
Finally.
Okay, joining me now, House Intelligence Committee ranking Republican. He is Congressman Devin Nunes. Great to have you on, Congressman. Your reaction to that?
Well, there's a lot of finger pointing. That's what I would say. It's pretty clear that I thought Senator Graham did a nice job of explaining that on January 4th, the agents that were in charge of the Flynn investigation had decided that there was nothing more to do to investigate General Flynn. And remember, this was an exhaustive 6-month investigation that had begun in July of 2016. And then we know about the emails, the communications that went on the 4th, and then there's this White House meeting on the 5th. Joe Biden is there. And it's still unclear to me who on earth brought up the Logan Act and the idea that Sally Yates, the deputy attorney general, would be talking about the Logan Act. And even when Senator Graham pushed her on the question of whether or not if he, as a senator, calls Israel and says this is not in the best interest, this Obama policy is not in the best interest of the United States or of Israel, you know, would he be violating the Logan Act? And essentially she said possibly. Now, look, this is a law that's never been used. Look, we can go on and on about this, Liz, but just another point that was brought up. Bruce Orr, her deputy, who is basically running like this shadow campaign between the Clinton campaign, his wife's working for Clinton, helping on the Steele dossier. He's meeting with all the Fusion GPS guys. He's running stuff to the State Department. The guy's still working there. Let's not forget that. And then, but Yates is oblivious to this. This is like the most oblivious deputy attorney general and U.S. history.
Yeah, that's the issue. Critics are saying Yates cannot be believed, given the timeline. Okay, let's back up. Flynn talks to the Russian ambassador in late 2016, advising don't do tit-for-tat retaliations against Obama's new sanctions on Russia. We need you, Russia, on ISIS. Obama wants to know, why didn't Russia retaliate against my sanctions? So administration officials under Obama unmasked General Flynn. Find out he's talking to the Russian ambassador. The FBI on January 4th wants to close the case in Flynn. Nothing there on Flynn. So can Yates really be believed when she testified that Obama's Oval Office meeting the next day, January 5th, was really just about, quote, getting information that they were going to share with General Flynn? Really? I mean, Joe Biden reportedly was talking about the Logan Act, using that against General Flynn. Obama pulls Yates and Comey aside and said, listen, even though I'm not supposed to be directing the investigation, put the right people on it. Make sure you have the right people on that Flynn investigation. The right people, meaning FBI agents like Peter Strzok, who then went after Flynn. So can Sally Yates really be believed here? And did Republicans really hold her feet to the fire?
Well, I think let's just take can Yates be believed? Let's just talk about what's not believable. What's not believable is that she had no clue, she's totally oblivious, that the Democrats had paid for this dossier. She claimed she read the FISA application. She signed the application. Look, this is a big deal. Opening up an investigation into the Trump campaign and going to a federal court and getting a FISA warrant, she had to know about Crossfire Hurricane, the investigation. Then in October, right before the election, they're going in to spy on a Trump campaign associate. This is a really big, big deal. And so for her to be kind of oblivious, oh, you know, we didn't know who paid for it at the time. And then, you know, on January 4th, the FBI, you know, basically they want to wash their hands. The actual investigators want to wash their hands. They had to have known about this phone call with Kislyak. So who generates this whole idea of the Logan Act? Why do they keep this open? And look,
should Obama and Biden be called in to testify? I know AG Barr said he's not going to do that because it certainly looks like Obama and Biden were deeper into this, according to government documents and the media's reporting. I mean, I hear what you're saying. Sally Yates now says she's shocked by the Justice Department watchdog report showing FBI abuses of the FISA court, where it deceived the FISA court, misled the FISA court, didn't disclose they were using fully the, you know, how they were using the Steele dossier, that the Democrats paid for it. Hillary Clinton campaign helped fund it. Hillary Clinton's campaign was going to use the Steele opposition research on Trump to contest the 2016 election. And Stuart Evans at the Office of Intelligence of the Justice Department knew there were problems with the Democrats funding it. But somehow Sally Yates doesn't know any of this. You know, so that's the issue. How does Sally Yates really not know when she signed the when she signed those FBI FISA wiretaps, but she's saying that Comey's going rogue? The question to her was, how and why did you not know?
Yeah, and I think when you look at this, they clearly don't like Comey, because Comey seemed to be, I think that's the right description. He did go rogue quite often. And look, he was going to be fired. Don't forget, Hillary Clinton was going to fire Comey if she had won. And probably in retrospect, Trump should have fired him right off the bat. But that wouldn't have been the only problem, because you had Yates and this whole cabal that was involved in this January 5th meeting that allowed McCabe and company to okay this interview that General Flynn had at the beginning of the Trump administration. And look, let's not be fooled here. One of the biggest mistakes in all of this is that General Flynn should have never been fired. Now, look, I know going back in time, it's hard because nobody knows who's telling the truth. But yeah. President Trump at the time and the vice president should have known that something really smelled here. And, you know, they knew that nobody
right.
was colluding
with
Russians.
Right. And why was Obama and Biden, why were they having that Oval Office meeting on January right. 5th about General Flynn? Why? Why even have the meeting at all? When the FBI was going to close the case. I want to get to this soundbite because Rod Rosenstein, who succeeded Sally Yates as deputy acting attorney general, he also testified he would not have approved those FISA wiretaps that the FBI got from the court. Let's watch this soundbite with Sally Yates here. Watch this.
Did you read the Horowitz report, Ms. Yates?
I did.
Were you shocked by it?
I certainly was shocked, yes.
Does it bother you that the FISA court rebuked the Department of Justice and the FBI regarding the Carter Page warrant application?
Senator, I believe that the Department of Justice and the FBI have a duty of candor with the FISA court.
Do you believe they fulfilled that duty?
No, I do not believe that they did.
Knowing then what you know now, would you sign that application?
Senator, I would never sign any document.
So I take that to be no, because that document was a fraud. Is that a fair statement? If you knew then what you know now, you wouldn't have signed it?
I wouldn't sign anything that I knew to contain errors or omissions.
Well, did that contain errors and omissions?
Yeah, and I would never knowingly sign a document.
Right.
Okay, so Congressman, you see... still the runaround. I mean, I think yeah. people out there watching this and studying this say, you know, Republicans keep saying they want to get to the bottom of this. Get to the bottom of this. Here's the issue. There was opposition research funded by Democrats that made its way into the FBI to spy on an opposition campaign. Period. Everybody agrees, don't have Russian meddling. Stop Russian meddling. Stop Russian interference. Stop that. But this is something else. This changed into something else that basically transgresses what Americans feel that they value about this country. It's about independence. It's about not being spied on by an opposition political party. And how did that happen where the Hillary Clinton campaign funds opposition research, it gets into the FBI, it's used to get FISA wiretaps meant for terrorists to spy on people like Carter Page? How does that happen?
I think you missed one thing in your assessment. What the FBI and Sally Yates and everybody was concerned about, supposedly the Trump campaign colluding with Russians, they were doing it. And the FBI knew that Steele had questionable sources and that likely this information could have been coming from the Russians themselves. And that's the problem that sums up all of this, that they accused the Trump administration, or the Trump campaign, of doing exactly what they were doing.
Yeah. And it should be noted, Christopher Steele testified at a British court. He was paid to dig up this information on President, then candidate Trump, in order for Hillary Clinton to contest the 2016 election in case she lost. Congressman Nunes, it's great to have you on. Thanks for your insights there. Come back soon.
Thanks.
Myself, in my opinion, I'm so cynical about the whole inner loop there, whatever you want to call it, inside the loop of Washington, D.C., politics and Congress and so forth, that everyone has stuff on them, black belt. CIA is pulling all kinds of strings, like the puppeteer of the whole damn mess. So I'm not positive that we're going to have major revelations by, you know, Labor Day or whatever, like John Solomon seemed to indicate, even though he's got really good sources, and I hope and pray that something will happen. But I'm not optimistic, because this has gotten so big and the corruption is so big, it would take down the whole inside, you could say, state, you know, the deep state. And it would take down major portions of the FBI, Department of Justice, it would reach so far and so deep that I don't think it's going to happen, because that the deep state is so corrupt, so they'd be prosecuting themselves if they continued on this thing. I don't see anything really big happening. Some minor players may be indicted, but not anything big. Thank you for listening. Good night. God bless.